Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin on this Sunday, St. Patrick's Day. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio, 18 stories above the emerald green Chicago River. Well, joining me now on the phone is Rob Ritchie. He's the president and CEO of an organization called FairVote, and the group supports what's known as ranked choice voting. Rob, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning. Great to be on the program, Rick.
I thought it'd be a good idea to have you on. We've moved past our Chicago mayoral election to focus on the two candidates that are in the runoff on April 2nd. But I kept thinking as we were reporting and covering on 14 candidates running for mayor of City of Chicago to replace Rahm Emanuel, how things might have been different if we instituted what's known as ranked choice voting. So, Rob, I'm going to have you start first by just explaining and dumbing it down in simple terms what ranked choice voting is.
Yeah. Well, it is a great way to think about it, and not the only one these days, as we look to the 2020, you know, Democratic presidential nomination contest with an ever-growing field. You know, these
even more,
we have a lot of choices.
Even more today with Kirsten Gillibrand, so.
Yeah. It's just kind of remarkable what is going to unfold there, and it's pretty similar to what the Republicans went through in 2015, 2016. In our current approach to voting, which we do see a lot of variations of. So people often think, like, well, we just do voting one way in the U.S., and that's not true. And ranked choice voting is a good example because it's used in about 20 cities, the state of Maine, and there's other approaches. But generally, you get a field of candidates, and you can only vote for one of them. You might have views on more than one of them. In fact, we often do. You know, mayoral race like this, people had gotten to know more than one candidate, and they might say, well, you know, I do like this one, but I kind of like this one, and I really don't like this one, or, you know, this kind of, like, gradations of thinking. And ranked choice voting allows you to take those views you already have and put them right on the ballot in a significant way. So what you do, instead of just voting for one person, you get to rank them. So you say, well, here's my first choice, but here's my second choice, and here's my third choice. And then you can, that's why it's called ranked choice voting. You can use rankings in different ways in different systems, but the one that's used around the world and in a growing number of U.S. cities is one that essentially is treating those other rankings as backups. So they're ones to count if your first choice isn't a strong enough candidate to win. And so that's how the name instant runoff is often applied, because it's really trying to kind of simulate what you see in a runoff election. So Chicago's going through a runoff election where you had two candidates who led the field, you know, with a combined vote that was basically only a third of all the vote, but they led the field. Everyone else gets knocked out, and then all those voters who voted for a candidate who's not in the runoff essentially have to look at the candidates and, you know, who are left and pick one if they want to come back and vote. And with ranked choice voting, you've kind of done that already. You said, who's my second choice? Here's my third choice. Here's my fourth choice. And those backups count. So you add up all the first choices. If anyone has a first round majority, you have an instant winner. If not, the candidate in last place is out. The people who voted for that candidate, their ballots go to their next choice, and add it to their totals. And you keep doing that until someone gets a majority. So it allows you to do a majority in one round. But it also really changes the psychology of what the candidates are doing, because they are needing to look for connections with the backers of other candidates and sort of learning what makes them tick. And it really kind of changes the engagement philosophy that you see campaigns doing.
Well, is it demonstrated that one of the attractive features of this is that it has the potential of reducing the negativity of campaigns, because you've got candidates that are trying to be, you know, if they can't be the first choice, at least be the second choice.
Exactly. And you have to do it in this kind of affirmative way of looking for connections. And this was a great example because it was such a wide open field, a lot of different candidates, you know, different bases of support, different parts of the city, different racial histories, different, you know, different philosophies. And you as a candidate would be in a position of saying, okay, well, I want to stand out enough to be a lot of people's first choice, but I need to look for connections and find ways to be second and third, fourth choices even, and so on. You know, there were, I think, 9 candidates that got at least 5%, and then, you know, no one who got more than 18%. So it really was this kind of fractured field, and ranked choice voting would have promoted a kind of deeper engagement. It is one where that kind of happens in the runoff election, just happens with only two candidates, and because it's just one-on-one, they have a great temptation to try to get votes by being more comparative and negative than kind of making an affirmative case at this point. And so we'll see how that unfolds, but often one-on-one races get pretty nasty.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you look at the field that we had, and each candidate is going to play to their base, whether it's a racial base, ethnic base, neighborhood base, whatever, because you know that the numbers aren't going to be significant enough that someone's going to just break out. And so you're playing a game really very small by the margins. And rather than being necessarily forced, I would say, to run kind of a citywide campaign.
You know, 83,000 votes would have made it into the runoff, right? You know, and no one got more than 100,000 votes. So if you could kind of like find that base and make sure they vote for you, that's your goal in the runoff, to get into the runoff. And then you turn around and kind of pivot and then run a runoff campaign. But ranked voting kind of would promote sort of doing that all at once. There's pros and cons of kind of having a second bite at the apple, but I think that the cities that are using ranked choice voting, which were some pretty big ones, you know, you're seeing it in Oakland, San Francisco, Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's being adopted in the biggest cities in New Mexico, some Utah cities are starting to use it, and, you know, statewide in Maine, and it, you know, kind of does have this impact on having the campaigns generally run more civil and more kind of coalition building kind of efforts where they really have to learn about what the other candidates are thinking. Like, so if you're, you know, rhetorically or actually knocking on a door and talking to someone and they find out that, you know, their first choice is some other particular candidate, you kind of need to know what that means. And
sure, what's the affinity exactly. So I know how to address it or to whether to liken that kind of affinity.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're speaking with Rob Ritchie. He's the president and CEO of FairVote, which supports what's known as ranked choice voting. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio, joined on the phone by Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of FairVote. We're talking about the prospects and the use of ranked choice voting in places across the country, if not around the world. Rob, you mentioned that on St. Patrick's Day that Ireland is a country that uses that form of voting.
Yeah, exactly. It has this really fascinating, long-standing history in some other countries. Ireland and Australia both used it about 100 years. Ireland, as soon as it went independent, you know, almost 100 years ago, and Australia since 1918. And we actually came close to that. It's really interesting. That was just in the part of our history when we were changing from having parties nominate by themselves and kind of caucuses and conventions to hold the government coming into organized primaries. And because caucuses and conventions traditionally had a majority process, you know, voting again and again until someone got a majority, there was sort of interest in doing that, but we just didn't have the right kind of equipment in place to make it easy to do. And so some states tried it. It just was administratively difficult. But that's right when Ireland and Australia were doing it, and they just counted ballots by hand and went ahead and went to ranked choice voting. But they've used it a long time. It's completely accepted as the norm. They can regularly have more than two candidates run for office. In Australia, you'll see like kind of an average of seven people contest their House of Representatives elections. But no one talks about spoilers and split votes because they have ranked choice voting. And I think that's something that we're heading to. And, you know, we can look at these international stories to show that it's reassuring that it works.
Well, you mentioned caucuses, and one of the things, and it's not exactly akin, but like with the Iowa caucuses where there has to be a viability threshold. And so, you know, if a candidate, I think, was normally about 15% in each individual caucus, if they don't have 15% support, then their candidate is not eligible to be counted in that caucus, but that other candidates can solicit support from them to help boost their numbers, and kind of goes to that broader what's the appeal that, you know, if you don't have enough for this guy, how do I get his guys over to my support kind of thing?
Exactly. And so it's interesting, you go back there, you know, going back a little bit in time, back 2004, I know it was a really good example of like a fractured Iowa field. That was when Howard Dean was running and Dick Gebhardt and John Edwards and John Kerry. And Kerry and Edwards really did well in like picking up second and third choices from like Dean voters and Gebhardt voters who had been kind of going negative at each other. And it really had that practical impact. In a very interesting twist is that Iowa is actually going to be using ranked choice voting, it looks like, next year in their caucuses, with, you know, those in-person people doing that same thing, but they're allowing people to vote early with, looks like they're going to do a telecaucus, so people can be right on telephones and do it. Anyway, those people will rank candidates. They'll rank five candidates, and then they'll treat it like a ranked choice vote exactly because of what you're saying, and like that's trying to simulate what the in-person caucus voter does.
What about as far as implementation problems?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the frustration for me. I've done this a long time, and actually when we started in 92, John Anderson, the former Illinois congressman, sure, and independent candidate, was my kind of, you know, cohort in this, had an op-ed in the New York Times way back in 92, and when Ross Perot was running, it sort of made sense for a long time. And we've done other things besides ranked choice voting, but on this one, I just felt it would have zipped along a lot faster if we could have had voting equipment in place where it just became a policy choice rather than having to deal with workaround issues and so on. And the good news for us is sort of the inside baseball, but all the big voting equipment companies have kind of accepted the reality of ranked choice voting. They're putting it in their systems. The standard-making bodies are making standards for it. It's just becoming a norm, and then we can just debate it as policy. And I think, you know, the sky's the limit for it at that point, because there's a lot of conditions in our politics that I think would be benefit improved by ranked choice voting.
Well, and just for folks in Illinois, especially primarily older voters, you know, this isn't that far off from the way we used to elect the Illinois State House members, where it was cumulative voting, and it was you had four candidates running for three spots, and you could cast what was known as the bullet and give the guy just all three of those votes. You could vote for two and go one and a half, or you could give each one of them one vote. It's not exactly the same, but it's not unusual to have kind of, you know, seeing those multiple candidates for one office and being able to express some form of support in some way for it.
That's exactly right. And actually, when we brought up Ireland and St. Patrick's Day, it's that kind of system they use for their legislature. So they have multi-member districts, meaning you have more than one person winning, like in the old cumulative voting system. And then they use ranked choice voting, which does sort of mathematically on the representation side what cumulative voting does, but does it in a way that you don't have to bullet vote. Basically, you just have to rank your favorite first and then do backups. And there's a bill in Congress, in fact, the Fair Representation Act in the last Congress. It's soon going to be introduced to essentially put in that IRIS system. And the Illinois model is frequently talked about because what it meant was you had the sort of shared representation across geography. So downstate Illinois, you know, had both Democrats and Republicans representing the same district. Chicago would have both parties representing it because mathematically those voters are there. They are just, you know, lost in a winner-take-all system. Interestingly, an Illinois tidbit is that a student of elections who was a thoughtful member of the state Senate back in 2002 was prime sponsor of a bill to do ranked choice voting for primaries and put cumulative voting back on the ballot and have voters have a chance to bring it back. That was Barack Obama. So, you know, it's interesting. This can attract some pretty thoughtful people. Both John McCain and Barack Obama, when they were running for president in 2008, were interesting to us because they had both been very helpful backers of ranked choice voting.
Well, I think it's a subject certainly worthy to explore, particularly since we've come off after a brutal 2018 election season statewide to move only into a just as brutal 2019 mayoral race. And now we're at least seeing there's light at the end of the tunnel for that on April 2nd. But certainly I think it's something to be explored here in Illinois. Rob Ritchie, President and CEO of FairVote, thank you so much. They can get more information from the website at...
Yeah, at fairvote.org, and I'll shout out to Fairvote Illinois, which is a sort of a offspring but an independent group that they can find on Facebook by just putting in Fairvote Illinois. But people are really raising this issue in the state, and I think it makes a lot of sense. So glad to be on the program.
Thank you, Rob.